So welcome everyone. This will be the closing session for this retreat, which is, as far as I'm concerned, ending too soon. And it's going to have a few parts to it. The first is going to be a Dharma talk, and also kind of connected with continuing the practice. And Sagiv is kindly going to translate, well, put some of the what I'm saying into Hebrew and into the chat. And the second part will be an opportunity for any of you who would like to say anything to this group of people, maybe about how the retreat is or how you see things going forwards with continuing practice. So at this point in the retreat, I don't, want to be, talking about too many kind of new practices or trying to teach something different. But I just want to share some ideas about how we can continue to kind of play within the practices that we've already been exploring. And for some of that, we're going to need to kind of inquire into, like, what are they, and then and how can we apply them. So a really important question for us in our practice is, what do you enjoy doing? What do you actually enjoy doing in your practice? Or another way, more kind of direct way of asking that question could be, what would make practice more joyful, more enjoyable? And for me, that seems to imply one of the most important questions of all, which is, what are you practicing for? What is it you're actually practicing for? And I don't know, but sometimes I feel like these don't seem to be questions we ask so much, or maybe not regularly, not in an ongoing way. But a really important question, what am I practicing for? And the importance of that becomes, how connected is the goal and the way that I practice? Because if I'm practicing for something, in English we have this saying, the ends justify the means, which is to say that, the way you get to that goal, it doesn't matter as long as you get to that goal. And with meditation, I think there is no separation between the ends and the means. There is no separation between the path and the goal. And if our way of practicing doesn't look like where we want to be heading to, I think that requires some inquiry. Why is that? And so what I would encourage us all to do is to have this alive inquiry about, what's my Dharma? What's my practice? Where am I heading? And so just as we probably want to make this life ours, I think we also want to make the Dharma ours. And although, that could sound, selfish, I want the Dharma to be mine, it also has to fit our life, It has to fit the life that we wish to live. There's no rule book. And no one, even an expert in the Dharma or in any spiritual understanding, can tell you how to live this life. I don't think anyone can get outside of life to then tell you how you should live your life. They have their opinions, they have their ideas, and some of those ideas can be really useful, but they're useful for us to live our life. So the way I say this for myself is that freedom's not individual, but it is personal. So freedom's not individual, it's not for an individual. Yeah, it's way, way above, way beyond that. But it is something personal. Everyone who teaches, everyone who practices, practices in some kind of personal way, something, you know, kind of notably theirs about the way that they practice. So once we're clear about where we're heading to, or relatively clear, then just use everything you can towards your intentions. You know, Itzik, you know, gave his lovely half confession, you know, went to the sea to support the metta meditation. Yeah, use everything you can. Use everything you can. But when you use those things, don't forget to feel what it's like to be there. A really important aspect. And so I was saying to me earlier that it's really helpful for her, that kind of a fruit of the samadhi practice is to be more able to feel how it is, say, like to be by the sea, to keep using this example, yeah, but it could be anything. And then with that ability to maintain the attention, we get to feel how that is. And then we can just invite that in, visualize it, invite it into the being. Because as I understand what the Dharma teachings are saying is, all appearances are made of the heart. The sea is made of the heart. This meditation is made of the heart. And so what do you want to invite into the heart here? How does that start to shape things? If you just invite in the ocean, suddenly the heart has to extend and expand to be as large as the ocean. And if there's the malleability there, then, you know, what isn't possible? What isn't possible? And we'll kind of cycle all the way around in this talk from here. I'm saying, actually, everything is imagined. Absolutely everything you experience is imagined and is fluid and free to be seen in multiple ways. And on the other side, we're going to come back around to, and it's really worth getting engaged in this imagined world and making a difference to it. Yeah. So we're going to get there. So those of you who want activism and engagement may be slightly agitated by the idea of this, everything's just imagined. It doesn't, maybe it feels like it says it doesn't matter. It's not real. It doesn't matter. I think it really matters, and I also think it's not real. I don't think they're a contradiction. Because once we see it that way, then we can embrace challenges as opportunities. You know, opportunities to expand our heart. And it can actually kind of turn around from, you know, I don't want these challenges. I don't want this pain in my body. I don't want this, you know, difficult person in my life. Through metta, through samadhi practices, the flexibility, the fluidity that we can get to, means that I can actually love challenges. Yeah, I can love to sit with this pain and offer it kindness and care. Sit for longer, but with an open heart. Yeah, it's not the sitting for long that matters to me, for the direction that I wish to take my Dharma, my practice, but it's the open heart. You know, if anyone's done Qigong practice, I like to kind of think of this when I'm doing my practice. They keep saying, you know, hold your arms out here for half an hour without tightening up your shoulders. Yeah, the shoulders have to stay loose. You've got to get your arms out, but you can't use strength and you can't let it get tight. And so the whole time you're just concentrating on, relax, just relax, keep it out, like a tree. Yeah, don't think trees get tight shoulders. And stay relaxed, stay fluid. And it can be done. Yeah? It's a beautiful challenge, letting the body be like water. So this power of the imagination to come through and be there for us in our practice, really, really helpful. So here's a couple of ideas if you want to take this further. A couple of ideas I have about combining samadhi and metta practice in ways that we didn't get time to do on this retreat. Maybe on future retreats. But I think these are things you have the tools for and you can dive into. So in our metta practice, could we actually offer the presence of samadhi? Yeah. So whatever kind of taste of samadhi you have, and maybe there are a few extra tastes this morning in the kind of the metta meditation that Zaar guided, where we just keep offering metta to what's pleasant, or metta to metta itself, and all of these ways that we can dive into different experiences. We'll actually possibly find that by offering away the most beautiful experiences we can have, that they actually become even more beautiful. It's actually in giving away what we value the most that gives us something even more valuable. So the way I like to do it is you sit in the meditation and you're purposefully cultivating more and more well-being in the being for the purpose of giving it away. And you just keep generating more and more. You just keep filling up with as much well-being as you can, just tuning into those pleasant sensations for completely non-selfish reasons. Yeah. So that actually allows you sometimes to access more pleasantness because you're doing it for the right reasons. Yeah. It's not a self-fulfillment project. It's just more and more, and just like let that fill as much of the body, as much of the heart, as much as the you know, experience as you can, much of the awareness. And then you just call someone to mind and you just start radiating it out to them. You know, may you have this, may you have this. It's just a really lovely combination of those practices. Yeah. Here's the most deeply beautiful experience I can have. You know, a feeling of real love, a feeling of real peace, a feeling of real energy and beauty. Yeah. And the way that I often practice metta meditation and the way I guided it yesterday afternoon, the form of metta is to feel metta. Yeah. And the form here is also to feel samadhi. So you're feeling that samadhi, even if it's not there, even if you couldn't generate much. You just feel it and you offer it out. Maybe it's just a memory. Yeah. Like we bring in the memory of the sea. Yeah, we bring in the memory of the samadhi, or even our imagination of what the samadhi could be like. We just let that flow through the body, the heart, the mind, offering it out, offering it out. And this can be really effective because samadhi is the absence of the hindrances. Yeah? It's the absence of the agitation or tiredness. Yeah, it's this aliveness, this calmness that's bright and willing into the world. And it's not greedy and it's not aversive. And so we're giving away the most beautiful kind of things that we can do. And there's really no doubt here, yeah? No doubt for me when I'm doing it. I don't feel any doubt in this. I feel like this is worth doing. But we'll come down a little bit further more in the talk to talk about does metta really work? And I think that's just something that's worth thinking about. Yeah, what's it working on? What's it doing? Because that helps us also to expand it more. Okay, so that's one idea which I really think you should try, because I think it's very, very nice. The second idea is something that one of my teachers told us that she was doing. Is the goal of having no neutral people in the world left. Absolutely destroying all the neutral people in the world. Yeah. so that there's no one outside of our hearts. Yeah. So we typically have, you know, a little cluster of friends and a little cluster of enemies, yeah, or people we don't really like. And then there's all the rest of the people that we interact with, have exchanges with, you know, the bus driver here, the woman who's sitting over there with her carrier bags, the boy who runs through the park. That absolutely anyone you come in contact with, they get at least one metta phrase. Yeah. And if they're someone that we remember later on, then we can just practice with them and see how much practice it takes, how much development it takes, so that, you know, we know, you know, the heart can open to unknown people. Yeah. Can take in a being and it can offer them kindness. You know, metta is a little bit greedy. Yeah. It wants to be boundless. It wants more, wants more, wants more people, it wants more range of the people that we know. Yeah. And sometimes maybe we want to let it have that. Yeah. And metta is also empty. It appears in different ways at different times. You know, we talk about metta as friendliness, welcoming, kindness. But it's the same thing that also becomes compassion. Metta and compassion are not two things. They're just, in a certain sense, metta landing in different places. The sad and distressed beings, metta wants to meet those, wants to become compassion for them, wants to become actions to heal for them, to help them. Yeah. Metta also wants to land on the happy and the well, those who are joyous, are having a great time. And it wants to take joy in them. Yeah, it wants to become joy. It wants to become joy as well. It's kind of altruistic happiness for them. Yeah, for no reason. I don't want anything back. I just want to be happy for you as well. Yeah. And it's really skillful to do this, because otherwise we might have a subtle level of jealousy or envy for their happiness. And this kind of common idea, oh, they've got all the happiness. Right? But actually they want to share that happiness, and it's uncontainable. One of our inspirations behind the organization Sangha Seva is a man called Baba Amte, who would say, happiness dies if it isn't shared. Happiness dies if it isn't shared. So it's another good reason to give it away. Yeah. If you have any, just give it to someone else. And we'll also see that, you know, metta wants to have more locations in our heart mind of appearances, as we did this morning. Anything at all that appears deserving of being offered more metta, more kindness. And also, samadhi wants more middle ways, you know, the whole dharma of the middle way. And we've touched on it a couple of times, but just to kind of underline it again. So these in-betweeners, yeah, the middle way, in between the extremes. Let's keep just diverting ourselves there. So we're talking here these neutral people, in between friend and enemy. Yeah, there's this neutral people. But also all these moments between bored, yeah, there's not enough going on, and agitated, there's too much going on. And really getting sensitive for our samadhi, I feel, is important to bring calm aliveness into this gap and keep opening it out. More and more appearances. You know, all the sensations that aren't painful or joyful enough to be registered. What happens when we bring attention to those? Seek them out, we tune into them. And we get to see that mindfulness isn't neutral. Attention is never neutral. Human beings love to receive attention. Yeah, unless they're doing something embarrassing or secretive, you know. It's like we a lot of it kind of come alive with attention. As long as that attention has the qualities of kindness in them, which it naturally does, yeah. Naturally has kindness and care, and it brings things alive. Yeah, brings them alive, but also it moves them. It moves them along the Vedana scale, which goes from pleasant to unpleasant. And it moves them from unpleasant towards pleasant. If you bring kind attention to something which is painful or unpleasant or uncomfortable, that kind attention actually soothes the boundaries and opens the possibilities. If you bring it to something that's neutral, it comes alive, it comes into brightness, it starts to have a spark of joy in it and moves it a little bit up the scale. Bring more attention to that, brings it more alive, lets it more expand, becomes even more delightful. This thing that we barely were paying any attention to, suddenly becoming more and more delightful and delicious. Yeah. So that's a really liberating way of practicing. And it's that samadhi has that flavor of metta in it. Yeah. Attention has that flavor of metta in it. And so I think that, you know, just bringing in those qualities of metta really kind of supports the path towards the goal. And the goal really is metta in a certain sense. It really is love, where we're heading towards. Any sign at all that practice is going well will reveal metta. It's the condition of a wise and skillful heart. And so really, you know, metta practice is just the practice of inhabiting an awakened heart and mind. Yeah. And so our samadhi practice can massage the heart and mind, get it so it's more flexible, more malleable, more directable, so it can be shaped towards well-being, happiness and freedom. Which is exactly what we wish in the metta meditations. So the intentions are really the same, which is no surprise. No surprise. And so this is really worth developing because it's very simple, really. The Buddha at one point says about our thinking and about our intentions. He says there's really only two sorts of intention that a human being has. And their thoughts of metta or their thoughts that lead to dukkha. Yeah. Just thoughts of freedom or thoughts of suffering. And so if we check in and we think, you know, are my thoughts metta? You know, are they thoughts of generosity, of gratitude, of kindness, of compassion? And if not, you know, maybe they're thoughts that lead to dukkha. Very simple paradigm. And then we have these practices, metta and samadhi, which support us to head in that direction. And remember that metta is open for expansion. Yeah, it's boundless. Just checking, is there anywhere it's not going right now? And we just work on that. We work on the easy and then we slowly turn to what's slightly more difficult. Yeah, a lot of modern humans have a blind spot for being able to give metta to themselves. Yeah, it's really understandable. We're kind of trained and developed to feel a sense of worthiness is required before we're given love and happiness and wishing ourselves well. So it's really worth adding in seeing as worthy. Seeing as worthy of kindness. You know, a phrase that's used a lot in the suttas, and I find it very helpful. You know, it's no loss to me if this being is happy. It's no loss to me. In fact, it's a gain for me. I'll often say, it's a gain for me if this being were to be happy. It's really true. It's like, well, how could it possibly be a loss for me if this being is happy? Say, oh, because they're a real horrible person. Look at the stuff they do. How can they be happy after that? It's like, well, why do you think they're doing such horrible stuff? Because they're so unhappy. It's like, obviously, they need to be more happy. Then we can talk about them not doing stuff. Yeah. So I'll wish them happy. And then I'll try and make them happy. And then I'll ask them to stop doing that horrible stuff that isn't making anybody happy. everyone is worthy of metta. Difficult to find anyone who's not worthy of it. If it wouldn't make things better. So right now, who's not seen as within the circle of friends? Is there any living being? Yeah? Any living being? So, metta practice has been has appeared in some kind of scientific journals and papers and things, but to be honest, the science isn't ready yet. Yeah, like they're very kind of preliminary studies, often too small to be able to know for sure. Not enough control experiments, those kinds of things. But what the results are showing is that metta practice changes our access to positive emotions. Yeah. And hopefully that's something that we can sense in our own kind of personal experience. We can kind of add our own experience to the data map. But you'll have to decide for yourself if it has any impact at all on the person you've been wishing wellness to or wishing happiness to. You know, it's kind of equatable to prayer in this regard. Yeah. So if you believe in prayer, you should believe in metta. If you don't believe in prayer, yeah, that's fine. But I don't have anything to say either way about that. Yeah, it really kind of depends on your own belief system. But what we can certainly feel is it can change our personal view of reality. Yeah. So if everything is imagined, what does it do when we sit here wishing well for particular beings? I feel it prepares us through kindness for more acts of kindness. And hopefully, you know, this comes out into the world in our actions. Thoughts of kindness, thoughts of compassion are actually quite limited in their real world impact if they just remain as thoughts, just remain as intentions. Yeah? Nice thoughts in a meditation, and then the meditation ends. Yeah? So we sometimes have to make a little bit of effort as well to embody those intentions. Yeah, we develop the intentions, develop them until they become easy to access ways of being, and then seeing if we can bring them into being, bring them alive, support and kind of feed back through again. And so I mentioned before that Zara and I have this organization with some friends called Sangha Seva. So Sangha, the community of practitioners, of meditators, people who love metta and samadhi and all of this. And Seva is offering service, offering support into the world. So we come together in groups, in clusters, communities, and try and do some activities that will make a difference. So we get to embody the metta and samadhi practices. And there's one that we do in your local area called Being Peace. So one idea is we generate, like fill up the batteries with as much peace as possible. And then we go out to somewhere where there's tension, conflict, agitation, misunderstandings, lack of community, lack of communication. And we go out there and then we continue practicing, being touched, being in contact, and it's relatively limited what we can do now in the season of COVID-19, whether it's safe to do that or not, but we're hoping to be engaged at the time of the olive harvest. And before then, we're offering meetings where we come together, meditate, and make Zoom-based links of communication between Israelis and international communities and Palestinians. So if you're interested in that, then you can you can follow the link from, I put up some resources on the website. We also have a retreat coming up called Sacred Places, which is based around this lovely quote from Wendell Berry, which he says, there are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. So desecrated means neglected, rejected, abandoned, you know, not treated well. And so we're intending to meet up in the morning, have a meditation together, share our intentions together, and then go off in our own locations to clean them up. You know, put the beauty back in, just as we do in the metta and samadhi practices. Put the beauty back into this location so that other beings will see it as beautiful and hopefully see it as sacred again and worthy of treating with the kindness and care that we wish to see in the world. So that there's a link to that also on the website. And say there's a group of friends and I who are engaged with the emptiness and samadhi practices of Rob Babaya, which we've also mentioned him maybe once or twice here on the retreat, and we meet up Thursday evenings once a fortnight to explore those teachings. So if you like those kinds of teachings, notice board, not website, yeah, so they're on the notice board, which is on the website, but Zara's making a distinction there, which maybe it's not clear. And I've actually made the notice board actually part of the dependentorigination.org website again, so that you can get from there easily to all the other links on the page. A couple of things that Zara's doing. She's also engaged with the Tovanaz online sitting group and regularly does the Saturday morning session. And they happen once or twice a day, every day also. And she's teaching an online retreat in Gaia House from the 17th to the 21st of August. It's called Coming to Life. Sounds like a lovely title. And doing that with some other Gaia House teachers, another Gaia House teacher. And she's got a non-residential retreat with Tovana coming up on September the 11th and 12th. And there's a link here to put into the chat, which I will now do. Oops. That's for the Tovana retreat. And this is for the Gaia House one. And in a moment, Sagiv's just going to say a little bit about more about Tovana and also volunteering with Tovana. But I just have one last point to say is that, you know, we can use all of these places and locations to keep developing an ongoing feeling of practice. But with this kind of power of our imagination, we can also use that to support us in our practice. Yeah. I like to, at times when I feel like I'm sitting alone, yeah, and it kind of feels difficult to practice with what's going on for me, I will call to mind others, other beings, from other sanghas that I've sat with, or other people, including you. Yeah. And then I sit with you in my heart. Yeah. I know that you're there practicing as well, or living your life. You know, you have your deepest intentions are alive. And it's another way we can combine the skills of metta with the fluidity of perception of samadhi. Yeah. And these two tools, they're really endless. They want to be endless. They want to be combined in different ways for liberation. So I really wish you well with that combination. And I hope these tools serve you really well. And continue to bring your practice into beauty and your heart into love and expansiveness.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.